All right, folks, we're back. You are listening to the Drew Marshall Show. We are streaming live at drewmarshall.ca. We're on joyradio.ca and across the GTA on AM 1250. Thanks for tuning in. It's our sort of our last regularly scheduled, programmed kind of show for the year. July is a little more relaxed, a little more lighthearted. Lighthearted? That's not the right word. It's a little more relaxed.
Sure.
We've got some useless television trivia every week. We're going to spin CDs of the musicians who have performed over this last year. That's nice. A lot of fun for us.
Some great musicians.
And we'll just have a bit of witty banter. Tim won't be here for July.
Yeah, I was just going to say, probably.
Yeah. Gail Scott, she is a senior faculty member of the Enneagram Institute. Over the last 6 months, Gail has taught us all about the 9 Enneagram personality types. And if you missed any of her previous interviews and you happen to be listening today, you are about to hear a summary of all the types. And that's kind of like the Coles Notes version of what we...
Yes.
Did you ever study using those? Coles, like cheat? You go to the Coles Notes version of the Shakespeare book you're supposed to read all year?
Books, regular books, no. Shakespeare, yes.
Right.
All the time.
Yeah, because you didn't understand the book. So you go
don't.
To the Coles Notes... You still don't.
Yeah, and I'm a drama teacher.
That's not a good combination.
Out, down, spot out, I say. That's about it.
For thousands of years, spiritual teachers from many different traditions have reminded us of the richness of the human spirit and its potentials, but without real self-knowledge, it is not possible to awaken the deeper truths of the soul or to sustain whatever degree of realization we have attained. One of the most powerful tools for understanding ourselves and others is the Enneagram, an ancient symbol of unity and diversity, change and transformation. And joining us to wrap this whole baby up is Gail Scott. Gail, I'm surprised that you've lasted this long putting up with me. Seriously.
You know, I have to second that.
Nice. Very well done.
I'm happy to be here. It's great to hear your voice again.
So, how do we summarize this? What are we going to do today, Gail? It's all yours. I have no idea what we're going to do, but I do want to end our time with Gail Scott from the Enneagram Institute with a little summary of things. So, how are we doing this?
Well, I think we can, probably the best use of our time would be to, since we've been talking about the system and we went through each type, we talked about 2 different types, each month. So today we could just go around the wheel, as we say, and I could give you a little, you were calling it the Coles Notes. In the U.S. we call it the Cliff Notes.
Got it.
On the 9 personality types of the Enneagram. So what we know is that, even though it can be hard to believe until you look into it, every person on this planet, at least, belongs to one of these 9 personality types. There's some mounting evidence that it has to do with brain chemistry and other things, but it's sort of mysterious. It's an ancient system that continues to be, I would say, uncovered and rediscovered and developed, and especially in the last 30 years. But it dates back thousands of years to biblical times and ancient Greece, where it was well known. So what we know now is that there are 9 distinct personality types in human beings, and also a lot of us think that that holds true for some of the higher mammals as well, but we mostly talk about human beings. So what we could do today is talk about all 9 types, give you a little capsule overview, and hopefully your listeners can identify themselves and recognize themselves and perhaps their significant others in these descriptions.
Beautiful, beautiful. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, we usually start with Type 8, although it goes 1 through 9, and you would think we'd start with type 1. The reason we start with type 8, because we start with the body type. So there are a lot of triads in the Enneagram, 3 types in lots of different groupings. So the body types are the types 8, 9, and 1. So we start with the type 8, also because it tends to be very or relatively easy to recognize type 8s in our lives, because they're very strong personalities often. So we call the 8 the challenger, and has often been called other names like, you know, the boss or the chairman. But these eight type eight people are the natural leaders of the Enneagram. So they tend to rise to the top because they're very comfortable with power. They like being in power. They like being in charge. They like having things their own way. They like calling the shots. And in the healthy levels, these are the protectors, defenders of others. They can be the leaders of great social movements. They enjoy championing and empowering others. In this country, Martin Luther King is a very notable type 8 social leader who was all about championing his people and empowering them. So what we know the 8s by is their strength, their power, their natural vitality, their aliveness. They just have a natural gusto for life. They're very action-oriented people. They're very assertive and can be aggressive. So, but they really like, the reason we call them the challenger is because they love taking on challenges in life and seeing how they'll do when they come up against, you know, any kind of challenge or opposition. And they also like challenging other people to, you know, do their best, become empowered, do what they can do. So they have a lot of strong life force. These are often charismatic types. And they have very powerful, you could almost say, animal impulses and drives.
Okay, so I'm thinking, right, everybody thinks of this person, right? What's the name I'm thinking of when it comes to an eight? A celebrity everybody knows. What do you think, Tim?
Canadian Donald celebrity?
Trump? No, an American one. Who, Tim?
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. True story?
Yeah, but we're not going to get sidetracked by talking about Trump because he's very controversial. And most people do think he's an eight. Some people think he's a three. But we've had a lot of leaders, probably in, well, certainly in this country and, you know, certainly internationally. Because, as I said, they're very comfortable with power. So you can look at, you know, in other countries, Mikhail Gorbachev, Golda Meir, Indira Gandhi, you know, lots of people who come up through the ranks, a lot of military leaders, certainly a lot of generals, and people who rise to the top because, as I said, they like wielding power, they like being in charge. They can have difficulty, I would say one of their basic fears is of being harmed, being controlled by someone else, or being violated. So they're very much about protecting themselves and survival, you know, physical survival. So the worldview is that it's a jungle out there. So we have to do what we have to do to protect ourselves and to survive.
All right, next personality type.
Okay, so the next one is type 9, and we call type 9 the peacemaker. And this is a very good contrast to the 8, because that's a very different animal. The peacemaker is all about maintaining their peace of mind, maintaining harmony and stability. Their sense of self is that I'm a peaceful, easygoing person. So they do everything that they can to keep the people around them feeling okay, feeling good, feeling calm. They are not comfortable with confrontation. They don't like to get into arguments. They often were the invisible child in the family and have a history of sort of keeping the family peace. They're the ones that would be brokering the peace treaties between different members of the family or their social circle. So they can become passive and dissociated because things can be just too challenging for them, too much stimulus, too much input.
Right.
And they're a withdrawn type, so if things become too much for them to handle, they tend to withdraw. But overall, what they're looking for in life is for everyone to, you know, feel good and be peaceful and harmonious and to get along.
Okay, and that was personality type 9. That was 9. Okay, so the first one was 8, and that's the challenger. The second one is 9, and that's the peacemaker.
Yes.
And number 1? Mm-hmm.
So type 1, we call the one the reformer. And these are the folks that are trying to make the world a better place. And they're out there in the front lines. They're picketing. They're often politically active. A lot of ones go into politics. They're trying to improve things, including themselves. They have a very heavy inner critic that's always pushing them toward being a better person. So some of the qualities that matter most to one are being a good person, you know, and being honest and forthright and having integrity. Integrity is very important to ones. And you'll also, you'll often hear ones talking about principles of right action, principles of behavior. It's more important for ones to do the right thing, usually, than to do something that's going to benefit them personally. So their sort of hidden attitude is that, well, you know, I'm right most of the time, and so others should just listen to me. They have a sense that they know the right way to do things. They know how to, you know, take the higher ground, the higher road. And they're looking to improve things, particularly often in matters of morality and ethics and right behavior and honesty and how we treat other people. So again, we can also, we see a lot of people who change the world in terms of type ones who change the world because of being able to sacrifice themselves, really, and sometimes to lead movements.
Wow. Okay. All right. So if you're listening, folks, again, we're chatting with Gail Scott. She is senior faculty of the Enneagram Institute, and we're just summarizing all the Enneagram types that we've been discussing over the last 6 months. Type 8, Challenger. Type 9, Peacemaker. Type 1, Reformer. Type 2?
So type 2 is the helper, also called the partner or the lover. And these are people who take pride in the idea that I'm a source of love in the world. So I'm bringing love and helpfulness and nurturing to the important people in my life. So for the twos are the most interpersonal type. For twos, it's all about other people. So my relationships, you know, feeling close to other people. I want to be needed by other people. I want to be acknowledged for what I do for people. So they have a sort of an instinctual intelligence that allows them to know what other people need. So they're very good at fulfilling needs of other people. They can see, like, right away, like, oh, you need a hug, you need a cookie, you need this. So they're right in there. They like being close to their significant others. Sometimes they can become the power behind the throne, right, and sort of be in charge of other, you know, significant or important people, politicians or people in lots of different walks of life. They don't always seek the limelight themselves, but they do want to be sort of important intermediaries and people that are confidants of other important people. So for them, these are heart people, and it's all about feeling loved, showing love, you know, intimacy, and their self-image is that I am a caring, loving person. You know, I'm always loving, I'm always doing things, you know, for this is for your own good. So in the less healthy areas, they can start to feel like martyrs or that other people are taking me for granted, and they can also become very you know, possessive and manipulative of the people in their lives. But their basic heart desire is to be a kind, loving, nurturing, helping person in service to others.
That sounds a lot like me, doesn't it, Tim? Hey?
Isn't yeah, it? Especially the kind, loving part.
Hey, that's me right there.
Yeah. That is one of your numbers, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about me. I talk about me too much, and as a helper, you don't talk about yourself, you see.
Wow, you've been reading your notes.
Type 8, the challenger. Type 9, the peacemaker. Type 1, reformer. Type 2, the helper. And type 3, Gail?
Type 3 is the achiever. And these are the people who are just going for it in life. They are. They feel that they're here to do something with their lives, to make the best of their life, and they feel that they are generally loved or valued for what they do. So they become very early on, often, they become performers, they become achievers, they rise to the top, often, you know, in school, become the captain of this or the head of that or, you know, the president of this. And they can become workaholics. They have a really strong work ethic. They believe that, you know, to make something of yourself, you need to work hard. So they're able to focus very narrowly on what they need to do to get ahead. They can become very competitive It's important to them to be really good at what they do. And secretly, they would like to be the best at what they do. And they have the self-discipline and the work ethic to do that. So for instance, I noticed when I watched the Olympics every 4 years that it's the type threes are very heavily represented in people who are the best at the sport that they participate in, because it's important to them to be the best. And they put in the time, they put in the hours, they focus on what it is that's going to give them what they want, which is a sense of being valuable, being accepted and validated and appreciated. But for the three, it's usually appreciated for what they do, not right. necessarily who they are.
Right, right. So a lot of type threes at the Olympics. So I guess not a lot of Russians are type threes.
No, I think they're pretty evenly distributed in all countries.
I'm just saying that because the Russian track team is not allowed.
They're doping number threes.
Yes.
They're really number twos, but...
All right, now let's get on to number fours, because I still think that's me. And, you know, and it's hard to admit this, Gail, because it means I have to admit the sucky part of being a number four.
Or any type.
Well, that's true, yeah. Yeah, every type's got a little downside. Every type's got the upside. The healthy
That's
stuff,
right.
the unhealthy stuff. All right, let's talk about me.
Okay, let's talk about you. So we call the type four the individualist. And the reason for that is these people are really looking for their sense of identity, their sense of significance. Like, what is my life about? Why am I here? What is unique about me? What's different about me? You know, what are my special gifts? And they're very keen on being true to themselves. And interestingly, type fours are the most personal, not interpersonal, but the most personal, subjective, and introspective type. So they're often on the more withdrawn spectrum, but very introspective in that they look inward, and particularly to their feelings, to get a sense of themselves. So you could say the motto is, I feel, therefore I am. So it's all about my feelings, and type fours tend to have very strong feelings. What they really care about, what they're really looking for in the world, is a sense of intimacy and depth, particularly in relationships. These are not superficial people. They want to dive deep very quickly. And let's talk about, you know, the real issues, and let's talk about our stories. And they care very much about beauty and meaning. Fours tend to have a rather poetic or artistic temperament. And they might be poets, and they might be artists, and a lot of the great poetry and art in our world has come from type fours. But even if they don't have those particular creative talents, their temperament is very poetic. So they're very sensitive people, sometimes hypersensitive to everything in the environment. They feel things very deeply, and they care about, often they have this, you know, very strong aesthetic sense. So they care about how things look and feel. They care about lighting and texture and touch and sense and all kinds of sensory input. And they can be very, very deep, dive very deep, and that's why we get a lot of great art, a lot of great song lyrics, a lot of great poetry from fours. So what they care about is creating a very unique personal identity. And they tend to be very identified with their life story. So the life story of the four, which is often rendered in very dramatic and traumatic terms, is a big part of their identity. They feel like often they're very identified with having had an unhappy childhood, or having been, you know, ignored or abused or mistreated in different ways. And they're going about finding their redemption often for this by trying to create something beautiful in the world. So often, as I said, even if they're not artists, their surroundings will be very personal, very, you know, they'll create as much beauty as they can.
Well, my kids are pretty beautiful, so
yeah,
I've created a couple of beautiful things. Hey, other than that, I wasn't very artistic as a kid. I mean, Spirograph was about as artistic as I got, you know.
Right. So that has to do with, you know, your particular endowment as a four. As I said, not all fours are artists. But another part of their identity is being the misunderstood outsider, right? So there's a lot of envy and longing in the minds of the fours. They're thinking about, they're fantasizing about how things could be if only that person had seen me, or if, you know, I hadn't missed that train, or that person hadn't left me. And of course, this sounds like a lot of great singer-songwriter material, and it is.
There's a lot of fours in Nashville.
Yes, there are. There certainly are, yeah. So a lot of longing and melancholy, and sometimes, you know, feeling like I'm a special victim. There's a sense that I feel that I'm somehow flawed or defective, like I didn't get the full manual for how to be at ease in the world. Mm-hmm. So there could be envy of other people who seem to have it all coming their way. But they can make a real strong identity out of being, you know, different and uniquely wounded, but also uniquely special and gifted.
Again, Gail Scott, senior faculty of the Enneagram Institute. The website is enneagraminstitute.com. I would highly recommend going there. We're just about at the end of our summarization of all nine personality types, all nine Enneagram types. We're on to number five, which is...
the investigator. So type five, the investigator, are people who are looking for objective truth in the world. We find a lot of them in science and research of all kinds. And they're certainly heavily responsible for the whole rise of the what's called the revenge of the nerds, the whole computer industry and IT industry. These are the innovators, the specialists. And they're very interested in finding out what's going on in the world, becoming very proficient at something, and mastering some particular narrow niche that they are particularly interested in. And these people have the ability to have really intense focus on something. They like to go really deep, 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 not into relationships and feelings, not at all. Mm-hmm. They go deep into enhancing their and furthering their knowledge about the known world or the natural world. It could be about psychology, could be about astronomy, you know, many different things.
Gail, is it possible to, I guess what people like to do in this scenario where we're figuring out personality types is we all tend to generalize, right? We all tend to sort of say, especially when it comes to matching personality types up with each other. So some might say, oh, a peacemaker would never, fall in love or get married with an individualist or an achiever, a peacemaker and achiever. There's no way. Is that unfair?
Well, it's not completely true. In my experience, I've seen every possible combination of people getting together. What you see the least, I would say, are two people of the same type getting together over a long period of time, or, you know, becoming mates. It's not that it doesn't happen, it does, but generally we're looking for someone to complement us. So we know we're bringing certain things to the table, and we're looking for someone who's bringing other things to the table that will complement us, that will sort of enrich our shared universe. But more important than any two types getting together in terms of making it a success, more important than that is whether they're both people are hanging out at, you know, at the same level of health, relatively.
Right. On the phone with Gail Scott. Gail, she is the senior faculty, or one of the senior faculty members of the Enneagram Institute. What is the Enneagram Type 6?
Type 6 is the loyalist. And these are people who are looking for a good orientation toward life, a ground, something to trust. Something that will be supportive, something to give me guidance. And these people have a particular kind of, you could call it operational wisdom, that they're really good at organizing, making alliances, finding, creating cooperation, creating community. These are like, you know, the worker bees of humanity. They really understand the importance of people coming together to get things done. They have a kind of a social intelligence. And we often find them not necessarily leading groups, but being very proactive and very practical in terms of just bringing people together. Their fear is of not having good support and guidance. So that's what they're looking for in the world. And it could be in a person or a group or an organization or an ideology. But they're trying to feel, they want to feel secure and safe. Their self-image is that I'm a responsible, committed, dependable person, and that, you know, I do what I'm supposed to do, even when others don't. So they pride themselves on being good stewards, taking care of business. You know, my word is my bond. If I'm supposed to do something, I do it. We find a lot of sort of six mentality and type sixes, for instance, in large organizations, in the military, for instance, in the police force, because they have an understanding that there's safety and security in numbers, and they like that. And they also like doing things. It's not that they like being surrounded by people, but it's that they really understand that together we can accomplish a lot more than, you know, than the lone wolf.
Okay, well, let's just recap before we get to our final Enneagram type. Type 8, the challenger. Type 9, peacemaker. Type 1, reformer. Type 2, helper. Type 3, achiever. Type 4, individualist. Type 5, investigator. Type 6, loyalist. Sounds like the Letterman top 10 here. Ladies and gentlemen, the top, no, it's not the top. It's number 7. It's not even at the top. But why do we finish on 7? Because we started on 8, and that's one of the most important places to start, so we have to finish on 7. I mean, is there something really, really awesome about a 7? What's a 7?
Well, if you ask 7s, there certainly is, because 7s tend to have a very healthy sense of self-esteem. They tend to like themselves. We call the 7 the enthusiast, and these are the people who just have a lot of energy, smiling a lot. They tend to put a positive spin on things. They're looking for fulfillment and satisfaction in the world, and they're go-getters, and they can be actually very visionary people. They're quick-minded, often multi-talented. So what's important for them is the pursuit of happiness. So whatever that means to you personally, it could be could mean a lot of adventure, a lot of pleasure, a lot of stimulation. They like to have variety. They like to have options. They particularly do not like having their options closed off or being controlled in a way that they don't have a lot of variety and choice. They like being stimulated. And one of the key words for 7 is fun. If it's not fun, I'm not going to do it.
Uh-huh.
So I like to experience things, and I just want to try it all. If I don't know which ice cream is going to suit me, I'll try them all. So they're really into having sort of this freedom to be and do and experience everything that they want in life. So they're very often very future-oriented. They love imagining the possibilities of, wow, what could happen today? What might happen if we go here? I'm going to meet this person. And there's lots of anticipation about how wonderful and delicious, you know, the future is going to be. Now, the flip side of that is they can have difficulty with monkey mind. There's just so much going on in their one of the head types. So it's very difficult for them often to quiet down the mind enough to actually land and be here now and enjoy fully what I'm experiencing in this moment. My mind tends to go to be future-oriented and thinking about what's the next thing, what's the next thing, what's going to be the next thing. And I'm identified with being happy, and so I'm always about going out and getting what I think it's going to do to fulfill me.
Okay, I've been accused of being a little judgy when it comes to millennials, but I would put a lot of millennials in that enthusiast category, because it kind of seems like enthusiasts, number 7, type 7, kind of got to do whatever keeps stoking their fire. They can't just kind of settle down and do what needs to get done.
Okay.
What do you think?
I hadn't actually attributed that exclusively to millennials. Actually, you know, the baby boomers are considered a very 7-ish because they sort of introduced the idea of, you know, free love and sex and drugs and rock and roll and lots of pleasure principle and, you know, do what turns you on.
Right.
All of that. That's very 7-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
That's influence in this country, yeah.
Well, look, here's the thing. As far as the Enneagram is concerned, everybody fits into one of those categories for sure, as sort of their principal, their main type. But I would highly recommend that you all go to the Enneagram Institute website, theenneagraminstitute.com. There is a free questionnaire that you could take, and that'll give you a little taste of things. But if you can afford the $15, which I think is $4,722 Canadian dollars,
more or less.
Yeah. Then I would do the full-on questionnaire, because then it also gives you the information that comes back to you about your personality type is so thorough. I mean, okay, fine, you identify as a peacemaker, reformer, helper. You go, oh, that's me. But so what? Then it's about growing. It's about identifying who, not just who you are, but then realizing your gifts and strengths and how you relate to other people, et cetera, et cetera. And this is one of the best tools in my quiver.
Arrows.
Yeah, I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. It's awesome stuff. I love this.
Yes.
You do too, right?
Well, I took the free one because I'm Scottish, and then was so intrigued by it, I forked out the $5,000 Canadian dollars.
Stop it.
And fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, helps me understand my partner better and myself better and maybe my kids.
Yep, and your wife.
Yes. And the dog.
Yeah. Gail, yes. Thank you for enduring this show, enduring us. It has honestly been one of the most, I've never done anything like this before. I've never featured a monthly segment like this on my show in 13 years. That's how much weight I put into the Enneagram Institute. And to you, as just an excellent communicator, it wouldn't have happened had I not met you. I mean, we had some great conversations before all of this, and I thought, oh, we've just got to do this. So, Gail, thank you.
Well, thank you, Drew. It's been an absolute joy and pleasure. And I hope that a lot of your listeners will become interested in this and see what riches it has and how amazing it can be in your life.
Really well said. TheEnneagramInstitute.com. That's where you go right now. Gail, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Drew. Bye-bye.
Bye, Gail. Bye. Short break. We'll be back. Tori, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you have anything you'd like to share with our listeners at this particular point in time?
Indeed, I do.
Indeed. Let's see if you can say this all the way through without stuttering once. We're all watching. And action.
Maybe you've been thinking about advertising your organization on the radio, but don't really have the budget for a long-term marketing campaign. Well, what if we gave you an entire show?
Wow, that's a great idea.
The Drew Marshall Show is currently offering an innovative and affordable advertising concept for the small business owner. With web stats and listenership at an all-time high, Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show is offering you the opportunity to partner with us for an entire show. Become a one-day advertising partner and we'll introduce you to our listening audience for the day. Drew will mention your organization every hour during our four-hour show, and we'll give you a live five-minute phone interview.
Crazy.
Oh, and one more thing.
Yes?
We'll also offer... Sorry. We'll also post your logo and website link on our website for an entire month. So if you're thinking about promoting a special event, product, or upcoming sale, or if you just want to test the radio advertising waters without a huge investment, then consider becoming a one-day advertising partner with the Drew Marshall Show. Contact us through our website, drewmarshall.ca, and ask about becoming a one-day advertising partner.
Good, good. Ladies and gentlemen, Tori, the intern.
Yeah!
Yes, well done, Tori, the intern. Very well done.
You made it easy for me.
I did make it easy for you.
Oh, man.
I made you start over again.